keys and the girl is on fire. And I have to say, the young lady I've got with me is definitely on fire. Yes.
The girl, she's on fire.
Siren Radio 107.3 FM.
Now, I've got with me the Barefoot Rebel, which sounds an interesting thought. We're going to talk about eating disorders. Good morning, Zoe.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Hey, it's a real pleasure, my darling.
Thank you.
I'm intrigued. Barefoot Rebel, where does that come from?
Oh, gosh. So, basically, I didn't nickname myself, by the way. It was...
We never do pick these names ourselves. It's always somebody comes up with it for us.
Yeah, it's long story short, I applied to do a TEDx talk from, like, my hospital bed. I was really, really unwell. And somehow, by some miracle, I ended up getting through. And I ended up going on to stage to do this TEDx talk, but I don't talk in public. I can't possibly do that. So my anxiety was in orbit. It wasn't even on this planet, it was in orbit. So the only way they could get me on stage to slow down, to calm down, was to go onto stage barefoot, because as a grounding technique, I could focus on the floor beneath me, I could focus on what the carpet felt like, instead of focusing on the audience and triggering the anxiety, I could just centre myself. And it was actually Richard, one of the TEDx coaches, that when I came off stage, like shaking, I did it. He was like, yes, you did, you barefoot rebel. And it was born. And from that moment on...
I suppose I should say you should show me your feet, but perhaps not. No.
Maybe later.
For those of you, by the way, who are listening in black and white, Zoe here is about the most colourful guest I think I've ever had. Purple hair, multicoloured nail varnish, and the biggest smile that's going from one side of the studio to the other. But that's not the reason you're here. The reason here is because we're going to talk about eating disorders, and in particular, your own personal journey. How do you... it may sound a daft question, but how do you recognise an eating disorder when your BMI, your body mass index, says, well, actually, you're quite healthy? And unlike mine, as you can see, my body mass index is just it's gone completely.
What's healthy for one person isn't necessarily healthy for another, We're all so, so unique. I wish I would have known back then that only 6% of people with an eating disorder are actually underweight. Just 6%. When we talk about eating disorders and when we see eating disorders in the media, we very much have the stereotypical image of what an eating disorder should look like. Normally a thin, drawn-out teenager. When again, actually...
Or a really 6%. Fat, overweight radio presenter.
Give over, bless you. but yeah, we do have this stereotypical image, though, and it's dangerous, to be honest. And then when you try and seek out support, if you think, actually, there's something wrong going on here, you're met with, oh, but you're a healthy weight, but you're healthy. But we forget eating disorders are a mental illness. So it might look healthy, but my mind, what's going on in my head, is far from healthy.
So what was happening with you? Because, with all due respect, for anybody listening, you are Mrs. Average when it comes to body mass index at the moment. Were you really, really skinny or really, really overweight? Or what was... Because, the question says, when you're healthy, because you were, to look at, relatively healthy.
Yeah, so I hate the BMI. It's rubbish measuring index chart in my little eyes. should be scrapped, I despise it. But when I was severely unwell, I was what was classed as a healthy weight.
So what was the matter? What was the problem, Zoe, that allowed you or caused you to become unwell?
It was thoughts, behaviours, a mixture of different traumas, whirlwind of emotions that I couldn't deal with. I turned to controlling my food and exercise as a way to deal with these sort of things. I started to control heavily what I ate. I wouldn't eat anything unless I counted it.
So are you counting the calories?
Absolutely.
And all this sort of thing?
Very black and white thinking around food, so good or bad. There was no middle ground, very black and white thinking, no grey area. Exercising to complete exhaustion. However, this is normalised. This is okay. This is somewhat praised in our society, I feel. Oh my gosh, you're going to the gym after work? Oh, you're eating good food? Amazing. Well done. Keep it up. When actually what was going through my head was, I am so physically and emotionally drained, I can't carry this on. But when you're getting praise, it's...
But I mean, you know, if you're... I mean, you probably don't know, but my background is mental health.
Yeah.
I did 40 years in the business before I came here. Now, a lot of people don't see mental illnesses. They can see a broken arm because you've got a plaster on, or a broken leg because you've got a plaster on, but they don't see the broken mind bit because it's not obvious. How if you're not eating properly, if you're over-exercising, was that not a sign that for the family and everything that there's something wrong with Zoe?
No, again, it was very much praise. It is, you know, oh, my gosh, you're trying to lose weight. That's amazing. Well done.
But you're not overweight. I mean, I could do with losing quite happily 5-6 stone, and it wouldn't matter. But you lost 5 or 6 stone, there'd be nothing off you.
I did lose a ridiculous amount of weight quite quickly. But again, I'd gone from maybe a little bit bigger to a little bit smaller. Again, it was praised. What people noticed more of, not necessarily behaviours, was my mindset. I became very withdrawn. I didn't dare go out for meals with friends because, oh my gosh, I don't know what's in it. I can't do this. Isolated. I wasn't this colourful person that you described earlier. I was very plain, very subdued, quiet. I know, quiet. Just not... The spark had gone. And that was what people noticed.
And when you say the spark had gone, how was this affecting things like work and family life?
All that my brain was programmed to think during the duration of that illness was food, weight, shape. I had no time for family or friends. No. And if I was with family or friends, I wasn't with them. I wasn't present with them. Again, my train of thoughts was... food, weight, shape, what am I eating next, how can I burn this off, what am I going to do about it?
Let's take a break for some music and we'll talk some more about how James changed things in your life. This is Supremes and You Can't Hurry Love. The Supremes and You Can't Hurry Love. Got with me in the studio, Zoe Burnett, the Barefoot Rebel. We're talking eating disorders, and in particular, Zoe, at this point, we're sort of talking about James, your hubby, your darling husband.
Darling husband of mine, yes, bless him.
How did James change things around for you?
Oh, gosh, he was my rock throughout recovery, absolute rock. But it wasn't just throughout recovery, it was his emotions, if you like, that made me realise that actually something's not right here. I was adamant, I'm fine, how dare you accuse me of such thing? I thought I was invincible, even though I was in and out of hospital constantly and dying, to be honest. I remember, I'll tell you a little story, I remember it was September 2018, I'd collapsed. After being at work, the physical toll on your body from laxative abuse and exercise addiction and restriction just took it out of my body. And I remember I was in hospital on an IV of drips. I wasn't paying attention to what this doctor was telling me. Something about my heart failing. I wasn't paying attention. All I was focused on was this drip and, oh my gosh, how many calories is in this drip? What can I do to burn this off? How can I compensate for this? Doctor left the room and I took out my phone and I started to Google what was in this bag of fluids. James, bless him, he is the most softest, most gentle man I've ever met. Doesn't lose his temper, wouldn't say boo to a goose. But he broke. I just remember him grabbing my phone, throwing it across the room and he just fell down beside me and just sobbed. And it was in that moment, looking at him, looking at my broken husband and him going, can you not see that this is killing you? It was that made me realise I need help for this.
It was a bit like a switch then at that point.
Yeah.
And you thought, it's going to be James or me.
Yeah, I've never seen him. James and I have been together 15, 16 years. You know, we're childhood sweethearts, bless him. I've never, ever seen anything like that from him, bless him.
So... James sort of persuades you to perhaps stop counting the calories and think a little bit about life from a different perspective. I mean, you're married to him. You know, were you ever at the point where he was saying, look, you know, it literally is the calories or me?
Bless him. He never kind of put me in that situation, so to speak. He was always quite caring, quite supportive. He was like, I can see what you're doing. I know I can't stop you, but just remember that I love you for you, not your body, your personality. The fact that you randomly, like, we had nieces then, the fact that I was climbing trees all the time with my nieces, the fact that I am a big child, the fact that I'm a pretty good baker, you know, he kept reminding me of my personal qualities, not my physical appearance, because that's why he loved me.
So how did you manage to change things around then? Because I mean, looking at you now, Zoe, if somebody walked past you on the street, they would simply go, wow, that's a pretty good-looking lady.
Oh, well, thank you. It took years of intensive treatment to get me to where I am, I'm not going to lie. I was under LPFT services for over 2 years, bless my poor psychologist. It took not just CBT, but it took so many different types of therapy to unpick some of these behaviours. However, it wasn't just the behaviours it was focusing on. We went right the way back to childhood, unpicked traumas, unpicked experiences that I couldn't deal with. We unpicked the black and white thinking styles, the cognitive distortions, everything. And it takes time and effort.
And having unpicked that now, I mean, rumour has it you've got a little child as well now.
A gorgeous little Rosie, absolutely.
Well, I mean, yeah. Now, I know that, you know, if you've got eating disorders, having a baby is almost impossible because it affects the menstrual cycle and all this sort of thing. So you've got over that. What's the future now? You've got James, you've got Rosie, you've got your life. Where's your life going to go now?
Pandora's box. All the places, all the things. I've got so many project ideas in my little head. Luckily, I am fully recovered. However, I do still live with long-term complications from eating disorder. James and I are trying for another child. Sadly, I relapsed after Rosie. Thank you, COVID-19, global pandemic. Isolated, feeling alone, perfect way to cope. So I struggled, had a little relapse, and that's sadly finished off my reproductive system. So we are completely infertile. I only got that news last week. Very testy subject.
Oh, sorry.
No, don't at all. But this is what I'm about to start doing. So I work for a charity called First Steps, and we're starting to do a course or some research, something, on infertility and eating disorders. Because, again, it's not just those that are severely underweight that lose the menstrual cycle, that struggle with low testosterone levels. It's all shapes and sizes.
And of course, we're aiming at youngsters here on the station.
Yeah.
For teenage girls in particular, and maybe young girls at the university, young ladies at university, this is perhaps a lesson for them, because they may not think about it now, but, you know, 15 years down the road, when they suddenly think, why can't I have babies? That might well be the reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, one in four people that struggle with eating disorders are men. It can affect testosterone levels and things as well. It's something that I see that's somewhat praised within athletes. I don't have to have a period, wonderful. But actually, it can go on to lead to long-causing damage. Not just that as well, but heart failure. I have a dicky heart. Thank you, eating disorder as well. Backwards and forwards hospitals, not fun. If I stub my toe, the chances of me breaking it are very, very high, because bone density is not great. It's these long-term complications that people don't necessarily realise.
Let's take a break for some more music. This is something that perhaps you we're giving you. It's Ooh. Sigma and Ella Henderson. They're going to give you a glitter. Ella Henderson with Sigma and the Glitter Ball, which I've given to Zoe today as a little present from me to her, because she is an absolute star, telling us all about not only her life, but eating disorders. Now, I guess we don't know enough about it. This is the publicity out there is, you might occasionally hear of a teenage girl, it very tends to be teenage girls, underweight, rushed into hospital, and it gets on the news. But generally, there isn't a sort of run of publicity on eating disorders. Do you think we should be looking at this more? Do you think we should be saying, actually, the counting calories and the going to the gym five times a week and that is not as good for you as perhaps a healthier option?
How dare we challenge that stereotype, the audacity.
Hey, I challenge everything on this show, trust me.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. Yes, it's a short answer. We absolutely do. Sadly, quite a lot of press and media work that I did do when I was in recovery, the comments that I got from people, the trolls saying, oh my gosh, you've got anorexia on your bike, mate, you're too fat to have an eating disorder. It puts people off wanting to share their story because of the joyful online abuse that sadly you can get.
Is social media a problem, do you think, for people with eating disorders?
Yes. It's not to blame, but my goodness, does it play a part.
Yeah.
So my current job, I actually work one-to-one with children and young people that struggle with eating disorders. And it's a conversation that I have with every single service user. The problem with algorithms, Instagram, for example, if I'm allowed to say it.
Yeah, there are other social medias out there, but yeah, Instagram.
Just realised what I did there. But obviously, if you start liking a specific content, that algorithm goes, oh, you like this, have some more of this content. And as you like and double tap and click, before you know it, your social media massive rabbit hole. And it becomes quite a dark place to be. And the comparing trap, if I ate the same and worked out the same, I'd look like them. Forgetting genetics. You're never going to look like them. We have different genetics.
Well, I jokingly say, you know, I am overweight. I know that. But even if I went on the strictest of diets and exercised, I would never end up looking like a Brad Pitt or an Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Chris Rock. I'm just not that sort of genetic makeup. You know, I am going to be an old, overweight, perhaps eating too many chocolates, but that's another matter. And how do we get the message across to people that genetics have an important part to play in them, their lives?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate, actually, that I do quite a bit of work with Lincoln Medical School, with different universities too, and with schools, big in schools. We do talk so, so, so much about set point theory, which is your body's kind of genetic size. I would love to be a few inches taller. Love to be a few inches taller. Is it going to happen? No, because of my genetics. This is how tall I am. Shoe size, the same. So genetically, we're genetically designed to sit within a set weight, a set range. People assume that it's, oh, what you eat and how much you exercise. And there's so much more that goes into weight than that. Like I said, genetics, what medication people are on, mental health issues can impact weight. Poverty can impact weight. If working constantly, relying on maybe nutritionally dense food, that can impact weight. But again, society sees it as what you eat and what you exercise, when it's so, so much deeper.
Zoe, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, I have to say, and very enlightening. I'm guessing that the future, if you're talking to people, is, you know, think about what you eat, but and think about your exercise, but moderation.
Yeah, it's kind of doing what makes you happy. I always say with exercise should not be a punishment for what you've eaten. You shouldn't be like, oh, I have to exercise because I've eaten this, and how dare I enjoy myself when I go out for a meal. The audacity. Find an exercise that's actually fun, that's joyful, that encourages you to move your body in a way that is fun and joyful. Eating out, you know, oh, calories on a minute, that's a whole different topic. Don't get me started on that. But it's okay to go out for meals and enjoy yourself. Again, we have a thing called a metabolism. It's okay to at Christmas as well. It's okay to overeat and enjoy these things. Your body knows what to do with it.
Zoe, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. A real pleasure. And I hopefully we'll get you back. Maybe talk some more about calories and metabolism in the future.
Let me at it. Thank you, my lovely.
It has been a pleasure. And wish you and James and Rosie all the best for the future.
Thank you.